This Choircast podcast is brought to you in part by the Liminal Living Podcast. Liminal, a word 1,000 miles wide but small enough to fit into the present moment. It describes an in-between place. We live most of our lives within this space, not quite ever arriving at our idealistic final destination. We spend so much of our energies on our best impersonation of who we wish we were, until we can't. But in sneaks a dark night of the soul, or perhaps a mystical experience. Our way of being has an error loop introduced. Today we call that deconstruction. Welcome to the Liminal Living Podcast, where we teach you how to be here, how to traverse these spaces, and where we can go if we remain humble, open, and honest.
Hey heathens, you're listening to the Deadly Faith Podcast, where religion and crime collide. I'm Lacey.
And I'm Lola.
And this shit is heinous.
The mind that was in Jesus, that mind is in me.
Without me, life has no meaning.
Why would God tell you what I'm thinking and tell you what I've said to my wife or my husband when you're not around? It's because I'm the pastor of the church and I need to know.
This is the only place where you can see truth.
It's really bad.
I'm worried because I already know what this is about.
Yeah. Well, before we get into it, let's jump over to an ad before we list all of the horrific trigger warnings.
Let's talk about Fiverr. If you're ready to turn creative ideas into a reality, Fiverr is your go-to. They do graphic designs, digital marketing, video editing, programming, and so much more. And it's all for very affordable prices. These are small businesses and freelancers that offer these services to you. And it's all amazing talent. Seriously, some of the greatest people in their fields. And really good turnaround time, might I add. So
yes,
Fiverr is a great marketplace, ready to support all of your success. So if you're a business owner, entrepreneur, or just looking for a creative boost, Fiverr has everything that you'll need. Join millions of satisfied customers and visit Fiverr today through the link in our show notes and make your vision a reality. Now back to the show.
All right, guys. So let's list off some trigger warnings.
Hit me with them.
There's a lot. Okay, so today, of course, as you guys can tell from the title, we're talking about Sandy Hook, the school shooting. Now, I'm just gonna give you a blanket statement that I'm gonna cry during this episode. I'm gonna tear up. Lola's probably gonna tear up. I've lost track how many times I've cried.
Why are you doing this to me?
While doing this research. I'm so sorry, but it's just gonna happen, and I'm not gonna like stop recording or try to pull myself together unless I'm like a blubbering mess, which I don't think I will. But we're real humans telling these stories. We have real emotions, so. If you are able to listen to this shit without having any emotions, talk to a therapist because I'm worried about you. Mm-hmm. But anyways,
I agree.
Trigger warnings are school shooting, mass murder, suicide, mental health, harassment, conspiracy theories, and small mention of eating disorders. All right, so let's just jump into this. There is so many different parts to this story, and we are going to cover all of it from the beginning of Sandy Hook to the ending of InfoWars. Now, if that does not make any sense to you, it will as we tell this story. So, Adam Lanzer. Adam Lanzer was born April 22nd, 1992, and it was said that he grew up privileged, or at the bare minimum, he didn't go without. Now, unfortunately, his parents did end up getting a divorce, but because of the alimony his mother received, Nancy, she didn't need to work. So they kind of had some privileges in that way. Now, this allowed her to focus on raising Adam and her older son. Adam was a little more eccentric, so Nancy began giving him more attention as he got older, and in tune, he became more needy. As time went on, Adam was diagnosed with OCD, developmental delays, poor social skills, and Asperger's, which nowadays we call it autism, but this was back, you know, in the early 2000s. So Adam greatly struggled to assimilate socially and even refused to eat anything that wasn't prepared in a very specific way. Very autistic of him. Like, that's just...
What do you mean specific way? Like...
It didn't really go further into that. And so...
I didn't know that could be a thing.
Yeah, I don't...
With autism. I guess it makes sense.
Most of the time with the autistic people that I have encountered or talked to, they have like what they call their safe foods.
Yeah. Okay.
So like they're only like, I know a little kid who only eats yogurt pudding cups and no, I think it's yogurt too. Yeah. Yogurt and pudding cups are like what he lives off of.
Soft foods.
Yeah. Oh, it's really common is McDonald's chicken nuggets and McDonald's french fries. That's like something I've seen so many autistic kids as they've gotten old, growing.
I bet it's because it's just always the same consistency. Consistency. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
My cousin, his was McDonald's French fries specifically, and their nuggets.
So weird that it's McDonald's.
It's hilarious that it's usually theirs or some. I've heard from a few others that it was chicken nuggets, but from a different fast food chain. So I'm assuming it's something along those lines, but it does specifically say like having his food prepared in a specific way. But that's all I could find. Like I couldn't find out any other details.
I hear you.
He also hated to be touched and went out of his way to avoid conversation with his peers. Again, classic autism. Now, an activity Adam did like was shooting. His mother had introduced him to this from an early age, and it became an activity that they did together as like a bonding experience. And some said that she used shooting as a way to try and normalize Adam. I will say that it's only in America that shooting is seen as like a normal activity. Like, I'm going to normalize you with shooting.
Yeah.
And you can have your opinions about that. I just feel like there's so many other things that you can get into. Why is that a normal thing here in America?
Well, what about, do you feel that way about hunting too? Because like,
no,
I feel differently when it comes to like hunting.
But it's a child.
I do not. Yeah, I'm not super into children.
That's
with firearms
where I'm like, you're trying to normalize your child with shooting.
Okay.
No, like, and I know they have like shooting competitions. Like, I don't have any problems with guns for the most part, especially for shooting or for hunting and things like that. I just hate how big it's gotten in America and how people are so obsessed with them and how much gun violence there is. Like, it's insane. Mm-hmm. I hate how they take precedent over our children. That's basically where I stand on it. So, unfortunately, though, some people said that Nancy refused to acknowledge Adam's issues and diagnoses and also refused to take the advice from his doctors and any other professionals around him. So it seems like for Nancy, she just wanted her son to be, air quotes, normal. She wanted him to be as the same as his peers. She didn't want to embrace like the differences of his autism or struggles. And so I think, and this is just my opinion, but I think she was just trying to normalize him as much as she could and not face the reality of who he was as a person. Now, because of Adam's early exposure to guns and consistent practice at the range, he became a very proficient shooter. And what's even worse is the fact that he became fascinated with them.
This is not surprising.
It's not surprising, but it's sad.
I don't know if this is, I don't want this to come across as like a blanket statement for autism, because like it's a spectrum.
Yes.
But I've just noticed with some people that are a little bit on the higher part of the spectrum. I don't know what to say exactly, but if they find something that they're really good at.
Yes.
The fascination and the like skill develops quickly and like just to an above and beyond, you know. I have a friend that he is very much like on the spectrum and he got into music super young, and he can play literally anything you put in his hands. He can listen to something and play it as is, not having to read music or anything like that. Like,
yeah,
amazing. So I'm just, that's how I'm relating this in my head.
Yes. So. I saw a video the other day that was quite hilarious. It just said, what was it? What flavor of autism did you get? Because I got the one, and then they start talking about like what they hyper-focus on.
I got
on,
the
like,
one with trains. I got the one with...
just, it was like all these people stitching it. It was quite hilarious. And that can be, you said like on the higher end of the spectrum or the more like, I don't want to say like extreme, but and the more intense side of the autism spectrum. But I think with this specifically, like a hyper-focus, the hyper-focus, like that can be just like across the entire spectrum autism. Yeah. So it's not shocking to me that this was something he hyper-focused on and became fascinated with it. It is very much the sense of like an autistic characteristic. But I think so much is playing into it is the fact that like he's not having the guidance from his adults in his life.
And he's isolating from peers.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
He's just like kind of withdrawn, right?
Yeah. And we'll get into it. It gets worse.
Okay.
But when you are not, like, somebody was really like scared when I started trying to get my children evaluated for their different diagnoses. It terrified this person, and they had talks with me about it, which were very, like, very, you know, genuine, and they were concerned, but they were afraid that, like, putting this label on them would make them feel stupid. And I had to explain this to them. My story is I didn't have a label. The labels I did have were lazy, stupid, ignorant. Those were, so, like, if you don't give your child a label for their diagnosis, they're going to be labeled in other ways that's going to be just as, or if not more, detrimental to their psyche.
I mean, what's worse, like, just going ahead and get, like, taking care of it and knowing where your strengths and weaknesses lie, or, I mean, you're going to find out eventually. If you have access to healthcare and you want to know why you think differently than other people or behave differently, like,
right,
shouldn't be that big of a deal.
This person understood after explaining that. It kind of was like a light bulb moment for them. And their biggest thing was like, I just don't want them to feel like they're less than. And I was like, no, it's just understanding that their brain works differently. Mm-hmm. And that can be a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just all it is. Okay, back to Adam. So eventually, Adam begins struggling in school and comes to a point where he ends up dropping out. After that, Nancy doesn't try to get him back enrolled or anything like that. He also starts to withdraw from the whole world around him and increasingly becomes more and more isolated. He even ends up cutting off his father entirely and distances himself from the only person that has been close to him his entire life, Nancy, his mom. So there are lots of red flags going on here. Yeah, but I just remember we are in the early or like mid to
are we in 2010s?
Late to 2010s, yeah.
Okay.
Like early 2000s, late 2000s before we get to the 2010s. So after this, he spent most of his time in his room in front of a screen, either be it like the TV or the computer. As time went on, Adam grew deeply fascinated with spree killings and began consuming every bit of information on every single one that occurred.
Was he playing like video games or like watching anything specific?
I don't know specifics on like what he watched on TV or if he was playing video games. My guess is yes, he was playing video games, but we don't know to the extent and what specifically. Yeah. Now, he was so knowledgeable about these spree shootings that he would actually go on Wikipedia and correct the information that was listed. Yeah.
What?
He also became horrifically obsessed with, you know, guns alone, gun crimes, and school shootings, and started researching school shootings.
Why? How do you get into that?
I think it was just a slippery slope for him, that guns went to gun crimes, and gun crimes go to spree killings go to school shootings. It's like a domino effect, my guess, you know. So we have a kid who had no help understanding who he is and why he's so different from his peers. He has no friends and no social life. He's struggling with anorexia that we do find out later on. He's obsessed with guns, gun crimes, spree shootings, school shootings, all of the above. He despises his community and he feels utterly rejected by them. He is actually very hostile and extremely angry. This altogether is a horrific combination. On top of all of that, Nancy decided that it was time to move, and professionals say that this could have filled Adam with a lot of dread. If you're on this spectrum, like, you love consistency, you love a schedule.
Change is so difficult in general, but like being on the spectrum and then experiencing a big change, like a move, oof.
I want you, if you've ever watched Big Bang Theory, the one where Sheldon makes, what is his name? I just went blank. Oh, makes his roommate.
Leonard,
yes. He makes Leonard wear the wool sweater until he can get the DVD returned. And he's like, I just want you, like, that's what it feels like inside of me. That's a really good example of, like,
wow,
this kind of change can be very upending for somebody on the spectrum.
Okay.
Now, in one documentary, someone said something that stuck with me. They said, there's something about cold mothering, but there's also something about giving in to a child all the time.
Okay.
Now, they're referencing Nancy. You know, like, she did give him whatever he wanted. She didn't push him to get back in school, you know, kind of thing. And this seems exactly like what she did. She didn't want to acknowledge his neurodivergence or other issues, and instead chose to ignore it and give in to anything and everything he wanted without creating any kind of boundaries for him.
Mm.
But also, listen, I'm not victim shaming her. Spoiler alert, she does die. But I'm not victim shaming her. I understand that raising somebody on the spectrum can be extremely difficult. I've seen it. My cousin's autistic. I worked with him. I've worked with many autistic children when I, you know, years ago. I understand that, like, the advice that I would give these parents, I would say, like, this is the advice I'm giving in to help with this specific thing. But I understand that, like, for me to say that is so fucking easy.
Mm-hmm.
But for you to actually be able to implement it and do it with your child on a regular basis is extremely hard. And the reality of the situation is very, very difficult. And I can see in the early 2010s.
There's still a reluctance towards, like, mental health.
Yeah.
Treatment or, like, even acknowledging everything. So.
Yes. And I can understand her desire to want to kind of pull away and not, like, put all these labels on her son. I can understand the fear.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not victim shaming her, but it does, I feel like personally, in my opinion, does play a huge part into the downward spiral of Adam, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And we don't have her side. So we're missing entire side of this story. So you have to keep that in your mind too.
Okay.
So let's fast forward to the morning of December 14th, 2012. Adam woke up and dressed in predominantly black clothing, along with a bush ranger hat and gloves. He then entered his mother's room as she was sleeping. He raised a .22 caliber gun and shot her at close range multiple times, killing her while she slept.
Do we know how many times?
It just said multiple in the head. Killed her instantly. He then loaded up a Bushmaster X-15, Glock 10mm, Sig Sauer 9mm, a shotgun, and a massive amount of ammunition into the trunk of his mother's Honda Civic and drove to Sandy Hook Elementary. No one is sure why he targeted the elementary school or specifically, like, just Sandy Hook, but I did find in one source that he did attend Sandy Hook Elementary. So there could be some reasons.
I wonder if he had a bad experience there, maybe.
In my opinion, I could be wrong, but I think that elementary was where he started to realize just how different he was from his peers.
Oh.
Yeah. And he also had studied spree shootings and school shootings.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of psychologists will say that, like, somebody who does one of these types of shootings is very narcissistic and they want their, like, 15 minutes of fame and they want people to never forget them. Like, they feel like a wallflower and they want people to, like, you will never forget my name. So he's done all of this background and he knows that nobody has done a school shooting in an elementary. So better way to get his name known for eternity?
I see.
Than to target, and not only an elementary, but an elementary he went to. Could he have had a bad experience? Sure. Could he have gone there because he was familiar and he knew which way to go and, like, the layout of the school?
Could have been all of those things.
It could have been everything. So your guess is as good as mine. Now, Sandy Hook had an electric lock on the front door that automatically locked at 9:30 a.m. Adam arrived at 9:34 a.m. and approached the school armed with every gun he brought except the shotgun he left behind in the trunk. When he got to the front door, he found it locked, so he shot the glass panel beside the door 8 times and gained entry to the school. At the sounds of the gunfire, the school principal, Don Hochsprung, and school psychologist, Mary Sherlock, go to investigate. Originally, Principal Don had told everyone to stay put, but Mary followed her to help. As both women leave the front office area and enter the hallway, they come face to face with Adam, and before they could react, he shoots them both. Unfortunately, neither of them survive. A few other school workers were at the end of the hall and ran for safety. Adam shoots at them, but they were able to escape without being hit. Adam then enters the front office, but doesn't find anyone there and didn't realize that they were all hiding at this point. He then leaves the front office and turns left down to the kindergarten and first grade hallway. So I say left, but it's like you're walking in the front door. It's the hallway to the left. The office is kind of right there to the right. So he comes out and he just goes down that left hallway. At this time, someone called 911 to report the shooting. It was about 9:35 a.m. The first classroom he enters is classroom 10. A first grade classroom whose teacher was Victoria Soto. Jesse Lewis, a fellow classmate, saw the man with a gun and yelled run to his classmates. At that moment, kids began running and a few were able to escape out the door. Unfortunately, though, many others weren't so lucky. In that room, Adam first killed Victoria Soto, the teacher, and Anne Marie, the special education assistant for Dylan Hockley. Hours later, when Dylan's parents came to see him at the morgue, they told her not to touch his body as she wouldn't like what she felt due to how he died. Apparently, Anne Marie had used her body as a shield for Dylan, but because the power of the gun, the bullets went through her and into Dylan. They also recovered bone shards belonging to Anne Marie inside of Dylan's body. I'm assuming the reason they suggested she not touch him was because he probably experienced rapid rigor mortis. Now, that usually happens when you die in a way that your body is tensed up at the time of death, and it literally just pushes rigor mortis. Like, it triggers rigor mortis instantly, and they did find him wrapped and clinged to Anne Marie's body, and they had to pry them apart. So, Adam also killed Jesse Lewis, Abigail Richmond, Allison Wyatt, and Olivia Engel in that room. He then leaves room 10 and enters classroom 8. Since this class had enough time to react to the situation, the classroom substitute teacher, Lauren Rose, which I think she was still a certified teacher, but I think the original teacher was on like maternity leave or like leave for a surgery or something like that. And so she was the long-term substitute. She was able to pile all her students into the small bathroom in the corner of the classroom. When Adam entered and didn't see any of the students, she tried to tell him that they were at the gymnasium, but he just shoots her and the behavioral specialist, Rachel DeVino. He then enters the bathroom of the classroom and finds all of the children. He pulls the trigger and ends up firing 80 rounds into that small room, killing all of the children, except one little girl that miraculously didn't get hit. In room 8, Daniel Barden, Charlotte Bacon, Josephine Gay, Madeline Sue, Catherine Hubbard, Jace Kowalski, James Madoli, Anne Marks Green, Grace McDonald, Jack Pinto, Noah Posner, Carolina Prevedeli, Emily Parker, Jessica Ricos, and Benjamin Wheeler all lost their lives. I have not been able to type that out, research that, or say it without choking up every single time.
It's got to hit different with you being a mom.
It is very different. Not just because I'm a mom, but I'm also a substitute teacher. I am also a mom with children in the public school system. Mm-hmm. And realizing that I would do the exact same fucking thing as these teachers. And it's not part of their or my job description to put my life on the line when a shooter comes in to my classroom. But would I do it? In a fucking heartbeat, I would. I would give my life for whatever fucking child is in that room. Ugh. I also have to say, I cannot believe that this...
He moved so fast.
It's so fast. I cannot believe there was a survivor in that bathroom. I don't know their name. It's never been listed anywhere. And I never, like, I didn't dig deep for it at all. Because if they don't want it to be known, then they don't need to have it. It doesn't need to be out there. But I just was shocked that there was a survivor in that bathroom. And I cannot imagine the trauma and the turmoil that that person is still going through.
Of all of your dead classmates.
You.
And you're just a child in the middle of it.
It was piled. It was bodies just piled up. The investigators didn't even realize it was a fucking bathroom because there were so many dead bodies when they walked into it. And this child was somewhere in the midst of that. Fucking horrific. Now, Noah Posner's parents could only see him from the nose up as he had a gunshot wound to his mouth, and the coroner didn't want them to have to see his body like that for the very last time. So a lot of these parents were only able to see their children as parts of their children. they couldn't see them as a whole. Some of them are being told you can't touch your child because you're not going to like what you feel. And I know I'm going into a lot of fucking detail with this, but I have a reason because we're going to be talking about Alex Jones. And so I want you to sit with the heaviness of what this fucking did to these parents. And it just exponentially like makes you want to punch this man in the face later on. So Adam then left room 8 and re-entered room 10. It was 9:40 a.m. and the cops had made entry to the school again. The moment Adam realized cops had arrived, he shot himself in the head because he didn't want to be taken alive. The total shooting lasted only 6 minutes from start to finish.
Do you have a body count?
26, including, I think that includes his mom.
Includes faculty.
Yeah. Yeah. 26. And then I think that includes his mom, but doesn't include him. So 27, I think, total, including himself. And the faculty was 6 people. So 19 children died that day. In 6 minutes, 19 children lost their lives. In 2012, we're in 2024 now, guys. This was 12 fucking years ago.
When I heard that this happened, you know, I was 14, I think, when this happened.
Yeah.
And I just didn't know the details of it. But almost immediately as it happened, I did hear about articles saying like, oh, these kids were actors, or this didn't really happen, or it was a government setup. And like, getting to the nitty-gritty of it right here, why was that the first reaction? Like, I don't understand.
I'll explain it as we go further into it. Now, a part of this shooting that is just next level horrific is that right before Adam made entry to the school, the office had turned on the intercoms for the morning announcements. When the shooting began, no one turned it off, so the entire shooting was broadcast over the intercom to all of the classrooms. Students said that they could hear the screams of their schoolmates throughout the whole shooting, which was another layer of trauma to an already horrific situation.
Somehow I was thinking some of them might get out of it without without all that.
No. There's interviews that you can watch, which we'll link on YouTube, of these children. They graduated last year. Some of the kindergartners and stuff had graduated last year.
Yeah.
And they're hearing their stories. And I don't understand how you can listen to children who have gone through active shooter situations and still be like, don't fucking take my guns, and not want any kind of gun, you know, laws, stricter gun laws or whatever. Like, I don't get it. I really don't fucking get it.
And with how school shootings too, like if this one wasn't enough, I don't know why it wasn't enough, but like
exactly.
They have increased yearly ever since this.
This is when I become a very big pessimist, because I'm like, we lost 19 fucking children. Like, yes, we lost adults, and that's fucking sad. But we lost 19 fucking children that were 6 years old. And that wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
I've lost hope.
Yeah.
If that's not enough, what the fuck is?
I mean, it wasn't just their lives that were destroyed. Their parents, their grandparents, their aunts, uncles, siblings, like, all of those were also altered profoundly.
Uvalde, a couple years ago. Are you fucking kidding me? And the way that the cops responded to that was absolutely horrific. And
what happened?
The Uvalde school shooting. Do you remember?
Is that the one where they
stood
didn't
outside?
Enter
yes.
As soon as they got
yes.
there? Okay.
And
yeah.
The parents,
I still don't understand.
And that one broke me in a way that no other school shooting has, because my parents actually used to live in Uvalde. So like
really?
There was a
wow.
very small, but like a connection to that, that broke me, because I also know the families that the type of families that live there. It's very,
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of immigrant families that live there who are struggling to get by. And then we have this happen. Like it was, yeah. Now, years later, one teacher was interviewed about the ordeal, and she recalled locking herself and her students in the small, small, small bathroom in their classroom. She said it was so tight and children were literally piled on top of another, and she was surrounded by hysterical children. In that moment, she truly believed that this was the end for all of them, because she was a fellow first grade teacher that was like right beside where all the children were dying. And she decided that in that moment that she wanted all of these children to know that they were loved. And so she just kept looking at each of them, telling them, I love you. I love you so much. You're so loved. You're so loved. We're going to be okay. Like, you're so loved. And those children in that room say that's like, that's the moment that stuck with them through this entire tragedy and into their adult lives now. After the cops make entry, they quickly find the children and staff dead in classroom 8 and 10, along with the shooter. After clearing the scene and confirming the shooter was actually alone, they remove the classes one by one and take them to the Newtown Firehouse for their parents to pick up. All other schools in the district were put on lockdown for the rest of the day. As parents arrived at the firehouse, some of them weren't able to find their kids and were then instructed to put their kid's name on a sheet of paper. A little while later, those parents were approached by investigators and asked if their child had any identifying markers on their body. This was the moment that many parents realized that their child was most likely dead, and not only were they dead, but it was so horrific that they had to be identified by the small birthmarks or unique characteristics on their body. At 3 p.m., the governor got up to speak, and one parent asked if there were any more survivors left in the school. The governor couldn't bring himself to answer, so the parents just kept asking until he finally hung his head and said no. This was the crushing confirmation that 26 families would never see their child or loved ones again. Around 12 p.m., remember, the shooting happened from 9:34 a.m. to 9:40 a.m. Around 12 p.m. that day, Alex Jones made a statement on his conspiracy show called InfoWars, alleging that the Sandy Hook shooting was fake and orchestrated by the government as a way to push through stricter gun laws in the U.S. These children's bodies weren't even fucking cold, and this man was calling it fake.
I had no idea that he did that the same day.
Not oh just the God. Same day, within two, just hour. Over 2 hours. You piece of shit.
Damn him.
Let's jump to Alex Jones and the shit fuck that he is. So Alex Jones was born February 11th, 1974. He got his start on TV on the Free Thinking Forum, Austin Public Access Channel in Austin, Texas. It was easy for Alex to stick out due to his bold and honestly outrageous personality. He's basically the definition of like rage bait is his entire personality.
That makes sense. Yeah. His face is always red.
Oh,
I'll tell
so
you that.
So fucking red.
He's so angry all the time.
And I tell you, I am not going to post on our Instagram a flattering picture of this man at all whatsoever. I'm going to make them look...
Like you could find one.
Really.
Like you could find
seriously
one.
Seriously. Agree. But as many people thought, he was funny, you know, so he was able to garner some kind of following pretty quickly.
We always make the wrong people famous. That's what we're really good
at. We really are good at that. And it kind of makes me think of the saying, like, you can't look away from a train wreck.
Oh, the train wreck,
yeah,
like, or a car wreck.
Car wreck. Yeah, you can't.
You want to look away, but you just can't.
It's like you're hate watching the man. But the problem with hate watching a conspiracy theorist is like they can easily brainwash you. And he did. So some of his biggest conspiracy claims are that the government concealed or straight out lied about the Oklahoma City bombing, which we aren't going to cover specifically, but I will mention it in a case later on and just like briefly go over it. But also, September 11th was fake, according to him. The 1969 moon landing, also fake.
I'm sorry. What?
Pizzagate. Do you remember Pizzagate from Satanic Panic episode?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, why does that sound familiar?
Yep. He was a big, big proponent of Pizzagate. And the 2020 election being stolen.
Oh, he also said that Turning the Frogs gay.
Yes, he is the one. They're Turning the Frogs gay.
So if you don't know him from any other thing, you will know him from They're Turning the Frogs gay. Which, okay, someone told me that there's merit to that. And I was
Yeah. There is.
Sorry?
There is.
But
there
yeah.
are a few species that are like, not gay, but like, is it intersex where they can like be both? And then there's also some that are like, they'll swing both ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And also, there was like I don't know if this was confirmed, but like where chemicals were being dumped into a river, the frogs there that were like in their DNA were male.
Yes.
Had female parts.
Oh, so, okay. So like,
I don't know.
Chemically altering the genetic makeup of like deformity, uh-huh. You know, like we.
Yeah, it's just mutation.
It makes me think of Accutane. You take Accutane, though. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen the pill.
Oh, God.
Their pill, like the foil pops.
I've never seen the pill.
Okay, so it's a sheet of pills and then you pop them out of the foil. Every single fucking pill has a picture of a pregnant lady with like the biggest X over it. When you get prescribed Accutane, you have to have two forms of birth control. Someone I know was like,
oh my God.
Abstinence, because we were Christians. They're just like, abstinence. They were like, what's your second one?
Not enough.
They were like, what's your second one? They forced her to go on it. They were like, we will not prescribe this to you unless you are on birth control. And they her take birth control with it because it is crazy how it will deform your child. And so it's like the chemicals.
Wow.
Okay, yeah, there's chemicals. And yeah, that could fucking, I believe that.
Okay, so that's the only thing that he's ever said that maybe has merit. Otherwise,
it didn't make them gay, though. It just made them.
No, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, yeah. I get what you mean, though.
Otherwise, it's all false.
He's a bullshit excuse of a person.
Stupid.
Okay, so in 2014, Alex Jones made the statement that no one actually died at the Sandy Hook shooting. He supported this claim by saying that the uniform crime reports showed no murders in Newtown for 2012. This claim is false, and quote, this is from Wikipedia, this claim is false and misrepresents the FBI report. In reality, because the Connecticut State Police was the lead investigator after the attack, the Sandy Hook victims were included in the Connecticut statewide records under state police miscellaneous instead of under the Newtown statistic for deaths. So it's just like that, like, it's the anti-vax. Yeah, it's just like the anti-vax where they read a study and think they know what it means, but they've taken the entire thing out of context. That's what he's done here.
Yeah.
Now, in November 2016, Eric Lafferty, daughter of Don Lafferty, the principal of Sandy Hook, who was murdered, wrote a letter to Donald Trump asking him to denounce Jones after he went on InfoWars and praised Jones.
Ugh.
Then in February 2017, the Newtown School Board also wrote to Trump asking him to recognize the murders of 26 people at Sandy Hook and asked him to remove your support from anyone who continues to insist that the tragedy was staged or not real, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
Trump, of course, did not respond.
See, is that just not enough for, if you voted for Trump and you're listening to this, is that not enough for you to go ahead and just like, turn away from him?
I don't know how many times I've said that. Like, is that not enough? Is that not enough?
How much more do you need?
Mm-hmm. Now, it was actually Alex Jones who made a video saying that the 2020 election would be rigged. And just 2 days later, Trump started spouting the same claim and ran with it throughout the rest of the campaign and even after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Alex Jones also raised around $650,000 for the January 5th and 6th rally for Trump, according to Wikipedia. Yeah, he also attended both rallies and even spoke at one saying, quote, "We have only begun to resist the globalists. We have only begun our fight against their tyranny. They have tried to steal this election in front of everyone. I don't know how this is all going to end, but if they want to fight, they better believe they've got one." During this speech, he also called Joe Biden a slave of Satan.
Sorry.
Yep. He also said later on, quote, "Whatever happens to President Trump in 15 days, he is still the elected president of this republic, and we do not recognize the communist Chinese agent Joe Biden or his controllers."
What?
I tell you, this man is fucking, is biggest fucking idiot I've ever seen in my life.
What is he on? Like,
ego.
Legitimately.
He's on ego, money, and a power trip. Like, that's.
He's got to be on drugs, too.
Oh, probably.
I mean, there.
He takes the crack cocaine.
Yeah, yeah.
In my opinion, allegedly. On January 6th, in the crowd, he yelled over a blowhorn that he saw over 100 members of Antifa in the crowd.
Okay. DeLulu has reached a new height.
Yes. Yep. Another claim Alex made was that the Fukushima radioactive waste had made its way all the way over to California. This was before the election. It's like way before this. But
does he know how currents work?
Uh-huh.
Does he?
Oh, it gets even better. So he said it's contaminating the air and the water. And after that, he sent out some of his staff to take radioactive readings across the coast of all of California. Mm. Well, after just a few videos, Alex called them and demanded that they stop posting these videos of these reports. Why, you ask? Well, because they all proved he was wrong and that there was no radioactive contamination.
Wow.
After that, he starts selling InfoWars Life, which was an iodine supplement he claimed could help protect you against radiation.
That's not how that... Are you okay?
So...
Science is not science in here.
What do you think his biggest motivator is?
Money?
Money! Ding, ding, ding!
Money, power, status, fame.
All of the above.
Clicks?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. So as you can tell, he's a pretty stand-up guy. She says as she rolls her eyes and they finally get stuck in the back of her head like her mom always warned her it would.
Is he religious?
Yeah. Because he called...
He is?
Well, because he called... Joe Biden a slave of Satan. So he's like the weird Christian relative you have that follows QAnon or is QAnon themselves. Like that's him. He's like religious in the okay. He's not in your face religious, but he will say things like you're being demonic or they're demonically possessed or he's a slave of Satan. In my opinion, I don't know, and I don't think he's religious himself. But I think he knows that if he says stuff like that, it speaks to his audience base.
That's true.
And yeah. That is kind of sad that is his audience base. He knows that the Christian or religious people that are on the far extreme side are going to be the mass amount of his audience. And that's a problem. Like, that's something that we should look at as a whole when it comes to religion. Be like, okay, why is this Venn diagram a circle? No. Now, okay, let's keep going. Like I said earlier, Alex began lying about Sandy Hook just 2 hours after it happened by calling it a false flag. And over the next few years, he drilled this claim into his audience. He would say things like, quote, my gut is with the timing and everything that happened that this is staged. And you know, I've been saying the last few months, get ready for big mass shootings. And then magically it happens. He also said, quote, why did Hitler blow up the Reichstag? I don't know how you say that. To get control.
I don't either, so.
There you go. Why do governments stage these things? To get our guns. Why can't people get that through their head? He also said, I watched the footage and it looks like a drill. He went on to say the whole thing was fake and didn't actually happen over and over and over again. He said it was classified as a, quote, training exercise involving members of federal and local law enforcement, the news media, and crisis actors, end quote. And that one was from Wikipedia. Now, let's talk about the interview that exploded this entire conspiracy into oblivion.
Now, did they interview?
The news was desperate for a statement from the parents of the children who died at Sandy Hook. And
Why?
They relentlessly called many of the parents. Robbie Parker, father of victim Emily Parker, was one of them that received so many calls he finally had to turn his phone off. After thinking about it a while, he decided that they weren't going to stop and they weren't going anywhere until somebody gave them what they wanted. So he chose to give a statement at a press conference the next day on Saturday evening, the day after the shooting. Okay.
What is wrong with people?
I know. But I can understand like why he's like, I'm going to be relentlessly bombarded. I'm just going to take one for the entire team here.
Honestly, yeah. I was going to say, big champ move there,
yeah.
Doing that, because that kind of takes everything off the rest of the parents and families.
I can tell you this was his biggest regret, and you'll see why.
Oh, God.
Now, like I said, his child was brutally murdered the day before, and he is literally in the beginning stages of grief. I don't even know that grief has hit him yet. It's still so fresh. And he said the reason that he wanted to do this was for Emily. He wanted everyone to know who she was and that she was more than just a victim of the shooting. So as Robbie makes his way to the mic, he nervously laughs and makes the comment that he's never done this before. Think laugh at a funeral type situation. Like, I'm so uncomfortable, I'm giggling. Yes.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. Because like, okay, like you said, the grief has not...
No.
It's looking weird right now, okay?
And how many times have I, in this podcast, you know, history, have I been like, I'm laughing because I'm uncomfortable, you know, like, I'm not laughing at this, but I'm just like, it's so bad, like, I don't know what to do.
What am I supposed to do with all this information? Yeah. Yeah. No, I understand. Yeah.
Same.
It's fine.
But unfortunately, this interview backfired on him because of that little awkward giggle. Alex Jones and many others accused him of being an actor, and the harassment started just 48 hours after the interview on CNN. They even created a Facebook memorial page for Emily after the incident, and it became a place for these conspiracy kooks to spew their vitriol.
Shut the fuck up.
Now, when I tell you this gets fucking horrific, this is awful. This is a 6-year-old dead, murdered child. And this is what they're posting on this fucking Facebook. I know where you live. Fuck you, motherfucker. I have a gun. I know your address. Emily is a whore. Liar. Robbie, you're the worst actor in the world. Yeah, they're talking about a 6-year-old.
What the actual fuck?
People are awful. And that's an understatement.
Ugh. Mm-hmm. I am physically sick at my stomach over that.
After this, websites were set up to just destroy Robbie Parker, and it began to control his entire life. He, in the middle of his fucking
grief. So he's trying to think, yeah, he's trying to do this as a solid to get the media off the backs of everyone, including himself, so that he can fucking take a minute to breathe and grieve and deal with what's happening. And then they turned it around on him? You forced his hand and then you made him into a villain.
Yep.
When he didn't even do jack shit, he was just a normal human in an uncomfortable position.
He lost his child. And then, after that, experiences some of the most horrific harassment for years, spoiler alert, fucking years to come.
Is this still happening today? Please say no.
Not as much, but yeah, probably.
Probably some.
Which fucking sucks.
Leave him alone. I didn't think I'd have to write that one down for you.
Seriously.
Just be a nice person.
Yeah. Who the fuck raised you? Now, another victim, Noah Posner, his mom, Monique, did an interview with CNN at the memorial for all the Sandy Hook victims. In the clip, she's talking to Anderson Cooper. After the interview, Alex Jones takes the clip and slows it down to replay a very small section where Anderson Cooper turns his head and apparently his nose like glitches out a little bit and disappears. And he used that as his proof that it was a green screen behind them, further pushing the narrative that the whole thing was fake. Like, there's not an actual memorial. It's all fake. But that glitch is only in the hoax clip. It's not in the CNN clip that was aired. So again, this mother starts receiving vitriol, and then it just explodes into everybody experiencing this horrific harassment.
This speaks to our priorities, does it not? Mm-hmm, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, another man named Wolfgang Halbit, I don't know his real name, that's what everybody calls him. He was an ex-law enforcement for school safety. Not exactly sure what that means, but he's also another big denier of the Sandy Hook shooting.
A resource officer? He's a resource officer.
Which resource officers are real officers.
No, yeah, they are.
But yeah. I couldn't find out specifics. I'm assuming because it just said an ex-law enforcement for school safety. So I'm going to assume kind of resource officer. Yeah. But unfortunately, he still denies it. To this day.
Oh, why?
Still to this fucking day. He firmly believes that the parents are all crisis actors and that the children are all alive and well out there in the world.
Wow, that is some top-notch acting. If that's the case, mm-hmm. Good God.
Right?
Also, Why do you, sometimes it's okay to just not speak on something. It's okay to not have an opinion.
My point to this is like, if this was this big of a conspiracy, don't you think they would have hired better actors than this? Like if you're able to pick apart, be like, oh my God, that's horrible acting.
I would say so. Don't you think they would have made this a little more grand, a little more, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Something. Wouldn't, if this was all fake, wouldn't the actor know not to fucking laugh? Because he'd be such a good actor. Or maybe just maybe he's not acting because he's a real fucking person who just had a real fucking tragedy.
Idiots. Just, we're surrounded by idiots.
Beyond. Yeah. The bar is on the ground. Actually, it's in hell. It's not even here anymore. Now, here are some of his claims, questions, or pieces of evidence that he uses to push his theory that it was all a hoax. First is the fact that there was no trauma helicopters sent to the school on the day of the shooting. He continually questioned this to multiple people, but it has a simple answer. Dead people don't need a trauma helicopter. They need a coroner.
I was just about to say.
They were all dead.
That's a mortician type deal. That's not a...
Yeah, they were dead the moment the police entered the building. They all died within seconds of being shot. Multiple times.
I want to clarify. The survivors, they were not hit
Mm-mm.
at all.
Not that.
Okay. So, yeah.
Not that I. Everybody that got hit died. There was no injuries. There was death.
Therefore, death survivors only. Would be like just being treated by local ambulances.
Exactly.
And emergency techs and stuff like that. You would not need to call in a trauma helicopter.
Exactly.
And like bring in doctors and mm-hmm. PAs and stuff like that to the scene.
Exactly.
Okay.
Second is his constant question about why paramedics weren't allowed in the school. That's just blatantly false. Later on, read statements from paramedics who were on scene and went into the school. We'll read them later on.
Oh, but God.
He also questioned the accuracy of Adam Lanzer. He's young. How can he be that good of a shot?
Well, if all you do all day is learn about this stuff and practice it on your own.
Yes, but also let's go to the reality of the actual shooting, okay?
Okay.
In the first classroom, in classroom 10, he shot and killed 6 people after firing over 80 times. Let's do that math. That's a 7.5% accuracy rate. That's not very high. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what about the bathroom? He killed all but one student in there. It's a tiny bathroom where the kids aren't moving, I mean, and he's just like piled, you know, just exploding the bullets on them. Of course, they're all going to die. Like your survivable rate to that is like 1,000,000 to 1. It's a fucking miracle that child survived. That one child survived.
Yeah.
Who is that? I want to hug them and tell them I love them.
But also, I want them to have space.
Same.
And mental health help and physical help in any way possible. I want them to have the easiest life.
Absolutely. The hug is for me. Is the hug for them? No, the hug's for me.
I want them
and that's selfish.
To have everything in the world that they deserve.
And plus
and more.
They should never work a day in their life. They should no.
No, they no, absolutely not.
They shouldn't have to work a day in their goddamn life.
Absolutely not.
I survived Sandy Hook and I was the only survivor in the bathroom. Cool. Here's a credit card. Do whatever the fuck you want with it for the rest of your life.
Right. Here's all the money from the government.
In the entire world.
All of it.
Mm-hmm.
Please live a good, happy life.
Yes.
Good God.
Now, another man named Dan Badonio. I don't know how you say it. He went to Newtown. And I also don't care because he's a piece of shit.
Okay.
He went to Newtown. He was also like an employee of InfoWars.
Okay.
And he was sent there to interview Wolfgang while he badgered and berated the parents of Sandy Hook victims and community members. He berated the fire police chief, went in front of the school board, and filed so many FOIA requests, which Freedom of Information Act, but they continually got denied. Now, the authorities said that they were inundated with requests from him, and he always requested them in a ridiculously accusatory and, like, threatening manner. So they were always just denied. Like, he was not coming to them in good faith. He was coming to harass.
Yeah.
Now, these people are still grieving, and this man comes in and harasses them over and over and over again, just refusing to let them heal. One woman, a mother of one of the victims, actually called it a death by a thousand cuts. And that hit me deep. I was like, wow, that's true.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
Yeah.
In an interview it's a documentary. It's called The Truth Versus Alex Jones. It's on HBO Max. In an interview, Wolfgang actually says that he hopes and prays he is right, because if he's not, then he said he probably needs to go to a mental hospital. Couldn't agree more, my dude. And you should have, signed yourself in years ago.
Big agree.
You're just fucked. Now, unfortunately, the townspeople underestimated the power of Alex Jones, Wolfgang, and their followers. They hoped that if they just ignored them, they would go away, it would die out, and then they could just move on. Spoiler alert, that didn't happen. As many of us know, social media grew exponentially after the Sandy Hook shooting, and with that, conspiracies and misinformation spread like wildfire. Many parents desperately tried to fight it, but nothing they did was accepted by the conspiracy theorists. They would show them pictures of their dead children's bodies or their death certificates, and they would just say that they were fake.
Oh my God.
Yeah, these people, they're just fake.
You'll never convince them.
No, it didn't matter what they did. The goalpost, as always, was always moved. One father worked hard trying to understand and reason with them, but the moment they requested that he exhume his son,
no.
Thank you for having that reaction, okay? Because it gets worse.
No.
He realized nothing would ever be good enough for these people. He's like, and I'm done.
They could have witnessed it in person and probably would still say the same thing.
It was CGI in front of my
face.
Yeah,
it was CGI. It was AI. No.
Another one of Alex Jones's followers, a lady named Kelly Watt, actually called the Environmental Protection Agency when they answered. She asked, who cleaned up the blood? They asked, what blood? She replied with, 26 people were murdered, that blood. And they just responded with, are you one of those conspiracy theorists? I stepped over those dead babies. And she replied with, no, you didn't.
Shut. No, I can't talk right now. I'm going to get this canceled. Yep. That's what's about to fucking happen.
It gets worse because Kelly also said that she watches true crime. Okay. She knows that they can exhume a body. It's easy to exhume a body.
Oh, it's
just
so easy.
Just exhume your son. Not realizing or connecting the absurdity and the callousness of their request. Like, are you fucking kidding me right now, bitch? Yeah.
I'm literally going to get us canceled. If I say anything else, I'm so fucking mad. Mm-hmm.
Now, at this point, Lenny Posner, the father of Noah Posner, he realized he couldn't get through to anyone, especially after they were like, exhume your son. He decided to start trying to take them down on social media. And so,
yes, this is a movement I can get behind. Yeah.
Unfortunately, though, social media companies at this time weren't taking down misinformation. They were only taking down things for copyright infringement. So this man had to go content by content, post by post, video by video, and report every single one that had his son's picture in it. And it was a very painstaking process, but he did it for years. And he got so many videos taken down. He got entire channels deleted on YouTube. But this tactic was a double-edged sword. On one hand, he was able to take down many YouTube channels, but on the other hand, it got them fired up and made them just want to prove that they were right even more. Now, in 2015, Alex Jones claimed Lenny Posner was taking away his free speech for taking down his YouTube channel. During one of his rants, a woman named Lucy Richards called into the Alex Jones show and berated Lenny. She called him an N-word with the hard R. And said he was going to die, motherfucker, and called him a cunt. And she was charged for this because she threatened his life. And she was sentenced to 6 months in federal prison. And part of her consequence, which was ordered by the court, was that when she was released, she couldn't listen to Alex Jones anymore. They're like, he's toxic.
Fair. More than fair.
Right? Can we just take the internet away from her?
Honestly, the internet can be such a nice place. You know, I feel like we try with our community to like make something good, make something ethical and heartfelt.
Yeah.
And fun too.
Yeah.
Fun in a way.
Yeah.
But sometimes I wish the internet just didn't exist.
It's like, moments some days like I'm
this,
like,
stories like it this.
Could it could explode and I'd be all right.
Yeah. It's all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now.
I feel so bad for these parents and these families. Oh, my God.
It goes on for years. And on April 16th, 2018, Jesse Lewis and Noah Posner's parents filed defamation lawsuits against Alex Jones in Travis County, Texas, for $1 million each. Now, the plaintiff's attorney said, quote, "This was the most egregious case of defamation in American history."
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Noah's parents said that due to the harassment brought on by the followers of Alex Jones, they were forced to move several times for their safety. Jones was upset about the lawsuit and used it on his show to push the narrative that the system was out to get him and this was just a show trial.
You know what? We are all out to get you, Alex Jones.
True. Fucking true.
That's what we
are. I can get behind that one because you're just a pussy ass bitch. Throughout the lawsuit, Jones refused to comply with the court's orders for him to produce any relevant materials pertaining to the case. And in late 2019, the judge fined him $126,000 for being in contempt of court. Unfortunately, that did nothing to persuade Jones to comply, and the lawsuit dragged on. Now, because of the lawsuit, they had to have depositions. Do you know what a deposition is?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So for those who are listening and you don't know what a deposition is, it's usually like before a trial, you have to come in and you're being recorded and they just interview you. Basically, they'll ask you a bunch of questions. So Alex Jones and many of the like employees at InfoWars had to go in for depositions. Now, Alex Jones was actually really excited to have his deposition and even said, quote, "People have lost the reality of what is real." And went on to try and claim that this was his free speech. No, it's not. That's not free speech. You can't lie about people and call it free speech. That's fucking defamation. Let's understand
the
laws.
He is so delusional.
He's delulu. Mm-hmm. When asked about the broadcasts bringing in more money, Alex tried to say that they actually lost money. That you would lose money on controversial stuff. And yeah, we just...
Never.
Yeah. And... you could see dips in their revenue. He's like, you can see dips, which we'll talk about later. That's false. When asked about his supplements he sold, he was like, no, those two don't go together. Not at all. Okay, again, that will come back. He was acting like a little smug-ass bitch the whole time during his deposition. That is, until they made him read a few highlighted statements from the police, fire, and paramedic reports from the day of the shooting. So let's read them.
Yes.
This is a statement from Lieutenant Van Gailey. This is just a section of it, okay? Quote, also trigger warning, quote, "I then walked into a room with Sergeant Cario. To the left of the room, as you walk in, there was a bathroom in the corner. There was a massive pile up of bodies in this room. At this time, I did not know it was a bathroom, and I wondered how the suspect had time to kill that many people and stack them in the corner of the room. Many of the victims had injuries that were obviously fatal. The children that were sitting on the floor of the bathroom were packed in like sardines." The next statement is from Sergeant Cario. "Paramedic Mac Kozlowski approached me. I've known Kozlowski for many years and recognized him as the head of EMS for Danbury Hospital. Kozlowski said, quote, 'You know I have to get in there,' end quote. I realized that the victims that were presumed dead would have to be pronounced dead. As we walked to the school, I told Kozlowski, quote, 'This will be the worst day of your life,' period, end quote." After those statements were read, Alex Jones's whole demeanor changed for the rest of the deposition. Before the end of it, he finally, this is like 2019, finally admits under oath and on record that Sandy Hook shooting actually happened. He tried to claim that it was almost like a form of psychosis he was suffering from, and he just thought everything was staged.
No. You don't get to tell us you feel bad now. Mm-hmm. You don't get to tell us.
I literally have in my notes, bullshit, you dick for brains.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When I tell you I hate this fan, it is not an understatement. No. So we all know he's not complying with the order to produce any relevant documentation.
Mm-hmm.
Relevant to the lawsuit. So on September 27th, 2021, the Texas judge issued 3 default judgments against Jones and required him to pay all damages in both lawsuits. These rulings were due to him not providing any documentation that was requested by the plaintiff. The judge said that Jones' actions, or lack thereof, were, quote, pervasive and persistent obstruction of the discovery process with flagrant bad faith and callous disregard for the responsibilities of discovery under the rules. So basically, since he broke every rule put in front of them, he was found guilty by default.
Mm.
Yep. So now, Alex is very upset by his guilty verdict. And he says, quote, I didn't get beat in court. I was beaten by an organized crime syndicate.
That's not real. Again, are you in psychosis, as you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, the only thing left to do is to have a trial to find out how much he owes. Think like sentencing trial after criminal is found guilty. They come back for a sentencing trial. This is what is going on. But instead of a sentence, they're getting the money that they like, how much they owe. Now, the trial opened really strong with the plaintiff's attorney providing a statistic. 24%. 75 million people believe that Sandy Hook was staged or a lie. That's a lot of fucking people. Now, during the trial, Heslin, one of the fathers, Jesse Lewis's father, testified and said that because of Jones's conspiracy talk, it fueled his audience and some of his followers, and they fired guns into his home and his car, along with a multitude of other harassments. During his testimony, Alex Jones actually wasn't in court. Instead, he was on InfoWars doing a recording, actually ridiculing Heslin and calling him slow. And he was like implying that he was mentally handicapped.
I feel like we can't get low. Every time I keep thinking we can't get lower than where we're at now.
Oh, but it does. Yep. Jones missed court a multitude of times during the whole trial, and they used clips from his current recordings the day prior as evidence in the court trial for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And he is just show that he was still pushing the whole narrative that Sandy Hook was a hoax and that the whole trial was just out to get him personally. And it's a show trial. One day on his show, he even said that everyone in that courtroom, including the judge, was demonically possessed. And they showed that in the trial. The way the judge looked at this piece of shit was... It's like a teacher at the end of a school year with that one kid who like has a bad family life, but they've been just like a terror all year. And they're just looking at him like...
No, it's like Jim on The Office looking at the camera after Dwight does some shit.
Exactly. Exactly. Fucking kidding.
That's all I'm imagining with the judge.
Yep. Now, Jones ends up testifying and tries to say he did comply with the court's request for documents and even mentions that he's bankrupt. Now, the judge gets pissed and they like excuse the jury and everything. And the judge gets on to him and she's like, you are straight out fucking lying under oath.
You're under oath.
You
yeah.
are under oath. She told him that it had been proven he had not complied with the request and that's why he lost the first 2 rulings. She went on to clarify that his bankruptcy was not adjudicated, so he couldn't claim he was bankrupt. And he was like, when she was getting on to him about the, like, you did not comply. And he was like, well, I believe I did. And she goes, your belief does not make it fact. And then she kind of giggles and she goes, that's why we're here.
That's it. That's the one, girl.
So fucking funny. Now,
where's that judge? Can I send her a candy basket or
Right. During Jones's testimony, he was asked again about not submitting the requested phone records of his text messages pertaining to Sandy Hook. Jones confirmed in an earlier deposition that he himself went through his phone and didn't find any texts with the word Sandy Hook in them. But then the lawyer drops a bombshell and shows proof he actually had Jones's text history for the last 2 years. Jones tries to make a big deal about it, saying, "Oh, see, you had them. So why are you saying I didn't comply?" And the attorney drops another mic by telling him that his lawyers accidentally sent over 2 years of his text history just 12 days before the trial started.
Those attachments?
Mm-hmm.
On the emails?
There was attachments to emails, which was his entire fucking text history.
Y'all some dumb bitches.
Mm-hmm. Now, these attachments also showed some very interesting other things. Now, let's talk about that. So his attorneys turn over emails to the plaintiff's attorneys, but didn't realize that they held valuable information. Some of the emails had attachments that showed the growth of InfoWars. Now, with these graphs, they were able to track that when Alex would read stories about Sandy Hook, they would get a massive boost in traffic to their website, which would then inundate the visitor with ads to the InfoWars store, where they sold things like DNA Force Plus. Okay, which translated into more sales for them, right? So they tracked that on these days where Alex would comment or talk about Sandy Hook being fake, their revenue for the next day would jump up dramatically. So for example, on September 24th, 2014, they posted an article saying that FBI said that no one died at Sandy Hook. Their revenue for that day specifically was $48,229.61.
God.
The next day, their revenue was $232,825.10 on September 25th. Because, you know, like you post, especially like websites, like it takes a while for it to start reaching the masses.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's normal to see like, okay, whatever you post today, whatever my revenue is tomorrow, I go back a day to see what, like where that traffic's coming from. And it was always Sandy Hook shit. So he knew that in order to make the big bucks, keep spreading this conspiracy shit. Alex Jones's dad, his fucking dad, even admitted in a deposition that when they saw astronomically high spikes in revenue, that they would track what Alex had been talking about the day before and try to emulate it. Yep, meaning they were spreading this Sandy Hook is a hoax bullshit for money.
Caught.
Red-handed. That was it, period. And they go through this in Alex Jones is testifying in the trial. And the reason that they're not trying to decide whether he's guilty, he's already found guilty. So what was the whole point of the plaintiff's lawyer in pointing out all of these details? To show that Alex Jones is nothing more than a big, fat, no-good liar. Mm-hmm. Also, this is really funny, but side note, those texts also contain information about the January 6th insurrection. So the lawyer sent it over to the committee investigating it.
That's just sweet.
Yeah.
Sweet frosting on top. Yeah. Perfect.
It's also important to note that Jones's lawyer, Norm Paytas, had also released confidential documentation of the plaintiff's medical records. And in January of 2023, Norm's law license was suspended. At the time, they found out he was also on the legal team defending the Proud Boys leader, Joseph Biggs, and his conspiracy charges. So this guy is, like, amazing. And I am sarcastic. He also said in the documentary, he called Jones. I can't with this. He called him an American hero. I'm going to pull a Bailey Sarian.
Big swing and a miss.
I'm going to pull a Bailey Sarian and say, get better idols. Because what the hell?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, like I said earlier, like watching clips, just clips from this trial, it just made me feel like the judge was a teacher having to deal with some petulant child the entire time when she was dealing with Jones. Okay. I typed this interaction out because I could not believe what I was fucking watching. Okay.
I'm so ready.
One day at the trial, the judge saw that Jones was chewing on something. Okay. So the judge says, "Spit out your gum, Mr. Jones." Alex goes, "It's not gum." The judge, "Well, what is it? Because you're not allowed food or gum or any kind of in the courtroom." Alex. I had my tooth pulled a week and a half ago, and I had some gauze in there earlier. Judge, so you're chewing on your gauze? Alex, would you like me to show you? Judge, no. Alex proceeds to pull open his mouth to show her, and he's literally like this. And he's like, see? It's right there. There's a hole. Right
what?
There.
What?
The judge is okay. Like, I don't want to see the inside of your mouth. And he's still,
see, there's a hole. There's a hole right there.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm.
And then the judge just, like, rolls her eyes and she goes, sit down.
Sit down.
And I was like, oh, my God. Having to deal with him is way too much. Now, at the end of that day in court, Jesse's mom actually felt sorry for Alex because he had been coughing a lot that day and talked about how his larynx was torn and he needed to have surgery. Shocker. If you watch any clips of him, the man's fucking yelling all the time.
He just screams the whole time.
No wonder your larynx is ripped, you dumb fuck. So she actually goes up and gives him some water and 4 cough drops because she feels bad for him. Alex says thank you and continued with, I swear this man, quote, I promise you someone edited that and gave it to your side. I apologize. I swear to you, what they've told you the last few weeks that I've been saying, it's not true. I apologize in good faith. I've been caught up in this and I promise you, I really apologize. I'm sorry. I believe your son died and I'm sorry for what I did. End quote.
Oof.
Now, I have some theories, which we'll get into shortly. I have some theories about his behavior during this trial. Okay. So just remember that. Now, on August 4th, 2022, the jury ordered Jones to pay Heslin and Lewis $4.1 million in compensatory damages. The next day, he was ordered to pay an additional $45.2 million in damages, in punitive damages. Now, Jones's lawyer expected the punitive damages to drop to $1.5 million, while the plaintiff's attorney thought that it would drop to $4.5 million due to the cap law in Texas. So the juries who came back and was like, $4.5 million in punitive damages. But then the judge looks over it and decides to like honor that or lower it to whatever the cap is for that circumstance because of Texas's cap law. Okay. So we're expecting it to be dropped. But on November 22nd, 2022, the judge ruled that Jones would be required to pay the full amount of the punitive damages, even though it was over the cap under Texas law. She said that the cap law didn't apply due to the rare, egregious nature of the harm done to the families by Alex Jones and his show.
That is, you know, karma.
Karma the bitch. Now then... On April 25th, 2023, Judge Gamble ordered Jones's attorney to pay $97,169 to Heslin and Lewis for his bad faith attempts to delay the trial. Because it went on for years.
Oh, my God. I was going to say, we just keep going with this thing. Mm-hmm.
Yep. On top of that, there was a $55,000 contingency fee. This meant that if he appealed and lost, then he would owe an additional $55,000 on top of the $97,000. Then there was an additional $61,000 fee if he appeals it to the Texas Supreme Court and loses. So they're like, you owe almost $100,000. But motherfucker, if you try to appeal it and you lose, we're going to tack on another $55,000. And then if you try to appeal it further up to the Texas Supreme Court and you lose again, we're tacking on another $61,000. You little bitch.
That is so good.
Yeah.
I mean, delicious.
Yeah. Jones had like a handful of lawyers. I don't think he had just one, but I don't know. I can't remember.
Say what you will. Our justice system is fucked in a lot of ways, but
sometimes it's deliciously sweet.
Sometimes we do have good judges. Sometimes we do have good DAs and people that are like,
just wait,
truly working for the betterment.
Just wait, because there's a whole nother lawsuit. You ready to hear about the second lawsuit?
Yes. Oh, yes.
So we're going to rewind a little. It was either May or June of 2018. Six families of victims of the Sandy Hook shooting, as well as an FBI agent who responded to the attack, filed another defamation lawsuit in Bridgeport Superior Court in Connecticut against Jones. They filed this lawsuit within just a few weeks of the other two families filing their lawsuit in Texas. So it's kind of crazy, but it all kind of happened around the same time. This trial required another deposition, and Alex had this to say. Quote, I'm not saying this as a victim, but this is traumatic for me, and I'm tired of hearing about it. And now I have a mental wall that goes up when Sandy Hook gets brought up because I can't deal with the stress of it.
No. Sit down. Sit the fuck. Actually, you know, come here. Come here.
I had to pause the show, the documentary, when it got to that point, and I went, you're triggered? This is traumatic for you?
Oh, and it's, what do you think? What? No, I don't care what you think. No, just
sit the fuck down, you piece of shit. Just stop
and take it the way that these families had to take it from you.
Uh-huh.
Absolute garbage, disgusting, horrible, motherfucking cunt bag, stupid dick face.
Amen.
Fuck you. Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. Go sit in syrup and go kiss a jellyfish.
Yes.
Idiot. Soggy lampshade. Yeah. Okay, I'm done. Sorry. No. I think that's enough.
This lawsuit, it goes just like the other one. Jones refused to comply with demands to provide documents, so he was found guilty by default. But when it came to this trial to find out how much he owed, he acted very differently than he did the first time around. So, for this trial, the court ordered him to be present. He was subpoenaed, and so he had to be there for every single day. And his demeanor, oh, vastly different than the first trial. The first trial, he was acting apologetic, still a cocky little fucking bastard for sure, but he definitely tried to come off as the nice guy that was just misguided. But this trial, he had the ugliest look on his face. He looked constantly mean, like there was a corn cob or six shoved right up his ass the entire time. He was just angry. In my opinion, he put on a show during the first trial because he's already found guilty. So it's all about how much he owes. So he's like, if I come off apologetic, if I'm like, I was misguided, like I really tried, blah, 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 then I'm going to owe less.
Oh, no.
It did not work. And so now he's like, well, fuck it. Now I'm just fucking pissed. Like, they are just out to get me. So he dropped the act, and this is the real Alex Jones. Now, at this trial, we hear from multiple families. Frances Wheeler, mother of Ben, who died at Sandy Hook, was at a conference for families who'd lost loved ones to gun violence. While she was there, she was in the elevator, and her and a woman started talking. When the woman found out she was from Sandy Hook and she was claiming her son died in the school shooting, she called her a liar and said they staged the whole thing. Frances had to tell her many times it did happen and commented that the woman was what we would consider a normal person, showing that this misinformation knows no bounds. It doesn't care what degree you have. It doesn't care how much money you make. Like, you can all fall for some conspiratorial bullshit.
The same way that you can fall for a cult. Like, it's
exactly.
All...
Mm-hmm. Yep. Another father was on vacation in Seattle when a man saw him while he was walking down the street and said, quote, how do you sleep at night, you son of a bitch? He was recognized as a father of a victim of Sandy Hook while he was across the fucking country on vacation. Meaning,
that's horrifying.
How much shit did he have to consume in order to recognize that man on the street? Thousands of miles away
and feel the gall to the audacity to want to say something like that to them.
Yeah. This father also made a powerful comment at the trial that just like, I just have to quote him because it was just like, whoa. He said, quote, my son died afraid and watching his friends die. That's the reality.
I thought I was past the tears.
I know.
I thought I could get past it. I thought I was on the angry stage.
We're angry and sad. One lady said she stopped to get gas one day 2 years after the shooting, and someone came out and pointed at her and said she's part of the Sandy Hook hoax. Sandy Hook hoax. She also was threatened to be raped and things were nailed to her house. So like different notes of harassment were literally nailed to her house. One father was told he would burn in hell. Someone also came to his house and demanded to see Ben because they knew he was alive. Literally a stranger's knocking at your door and saying, show me your dead son. He's not dead. He's alive.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Another family said that they had a letter sent to their home where the person said they peed on Daniel's grave because they didn't believe he was buried there. Another letter said that they were going to dig Daniel's grave up to prove he wasn't there. Robbie Parker, the man who did the interview, had made a quote during the trial and said, or during the documentary, and he said, quote, I already feel like I failed Emily in life because I sent her to school. That was a moment in my research I had to just stop. And that is a really heavy thing for parents to have to deal with nowadays, that I already feel like a failure because I sent my child to school. That we couldn't protect you because we were doing the thing of sending you to school. And that,
which you shouldn't have to fear.
Yeah, exactly. This should not be
like
a thing.
You shouldn't have to be put in that situation. Your kids shouldn't. The teachers, you know, faculty, staff, like no one should feel unsafe where you're literally just going to learn, you know, and teach and support your community. Like there is no reason for that to be. Everyone talks about, oh, our children, you know, they're the future and like our children are the most important. You don't prioritize them. Mm-hmm. You don't.
You prioritize your little metal pee-pees.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So what's more important?
Yep. The whole trial was hard on all these families because they are now forced to relive the trauma that they endured, not only on the day of the shooting, but every day since with the insurmountable harassment. During this trial, the attorneys showed a screenshot of Jones's website, and on the side, it had a question for his viewers. What do you think the most likely false flag ahead of the midterms will be? The first option was mass shooting. He was still, to that day, pushing the narrative that mass shootings could be a hoax put together by the government in order to control Americans and take our guns. So he's still pushing the fact, like, okay, it doesn't say specifically Sandy Hook, but it says shootings, mass shootings. So you're still pushing this narrative.
When will you be done? When can we, like, I thought that would cancel him somehow. I thought many things would cancel him.
Well, do you want to know what the jury awarded these families?
Yes.
The jury awarded the families $965 million. In damages.
No, that's it. That's the one.
Bringing Jones's total to almost $1.5 billion. Now let's put that into a little bit of perspective for us here. If you earned $1,000 a day, not a week, not a month, $1,000 a day, it would take you approximately 4,109 years to accumulate $1.5 billion.
That's nice.
Yep. So what does Jones do in response to these verdicts? Well, in order to try to get out of it, Alex ends up filing for bankruptcy in 2022. And normally this would stop payments like this for good, but not if the crime was malicious. A bankruptcy judge looked over everything and declared that this crime did meet the standard, meaning he would owe every single fucking penny. You are not forgiven your debts to these families. But the payments to the families got put on hold until they could establish a payment plan. At first, the family's attorneys tried to propose a budget, but Jones declined it and sent back a proposed budget of his own. In it, he was asking to spend a total of $70,000 a year. Now, due to all of this, his spending was tracked, and we can see that in July of 2023, Alex spent over $93,000 in 1 month. He spent $15,184 in payments to his wife, Erica Wolf Jones, $7,900 on housekeeping, Jesus Christ, $6,338 on meals and entertainment, and an additional $3,388 on groceries. The family's attorney claimed that these were textbook fraudulent transfers. I couldn't agree more because I'm like, how are you spending $7,900 on housekeeping? Like, I know you own a big house, but like, what the fuck? Who cleans your house? Can she come clean mine? Because actually, I don't want to pay that for her because fuck, she's too expensive.
No, I was going to say, how do you afford that? Like,
and why are you sending payments to your wife? It's weird. Real fucking weird. So yeah.
That is odd.
Yep.
Wouldn't they share a bank account? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
Yep.
Or at least have access.
Yeah. Well, in 2024, a judge ruled that Alex Jones's personal assets were to be liquidated, including his multi-million dollar ranch, other properties, cars, boats, guns, and more, totaling $8.6 million. Due to the liquidation, there was an auction to sell off InfoWars to settle some of Alex's debt. The only two bids in the auction were from a company called First United American Companies. They run Alex Jones's supplement website and who planned on keeping him on if they won. And Global Tetrahedron, a parent company of The Onion, a parody website that planned on kicking Alex Jones out and turning InfoWars into a parody website. First United American Companies bid $3.5 million, while the Onion's bid was only $1.75 million. But theirs included additional assets. The goal for the Onion was to end InfoWars and Alex Jones so that the fight could end and the families could be done finally.
Mm.
The auction was a sealed bid, so neither party could see what the other was bidding. In the end, the Onion did win because the trustees said that even though their cash offer bid was lower, when you totaled up the assets, including pledges from some Sandy Hook families who had agreed to give up a share of the proceeds, ended up totaling their bid at $7 million. It was backed by eight families and one first responder. They also had an exclusive advertising deal with a company called Every Town for Gun Safety. So they were planning on like really pushing forward gun safety and all that stuff, which was really like kudos to the Onion. I was like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when this came out, I literally thought, I thought it was satire. I thought it was fucking satire when I saw the first book. It was like, the Onion bought InfoWars. And I was like, that's funny. And then I was like, oh my God, it's true. They actually bought it. Now, unfortunately, I do have some bad news. Jones was not happy about this and pitched a big old fit. Another U.S. bankruptcy judge, Christopher Lopez, listened to a two-day hearing about the sale and ultimately rejected the decision of the Onion winning the bid. He said that the trustee made a, quote, good faith error when running the auction. He also said he didn't think it was enough money and that the trustee should have given the rival bidder who was associated with Jones the opportunity to improve their bid. He stated that the Onion acted in good faith and that there was no collusion or corruption happening, just that the auction fell short and left a lot of money on the table for the victims. He said that, quote, you have to scratch and claw and get everything you can from them. So he's referencing like, you need to scratch and claw Alex Jones and get every single penny he has to offer to this man. So I was like, okay, yeah, like I get where you're coming from. Now, unfortunately, he didn't declare what needed to happen next, and he left the decision up to the trustee of Alex Jones's assets. The Onion CEO, Ben Collins, stated that they would, quote, continue to see a path towards purchasing InfoWars in the coming weeks. The families of the victims of Sandy Hook were disappointed by the ruling as this felt like the end of the line for Alex Jones, but the fight is still ongoing. So I originally started doing this research before the judge rejected the sale to the Onion. And I was just elated when the Onion bought it. And it was pretty fucking awesome. But
man, this has been such a long battle.
Very, very long battle for this family. And it's still ongoing. It does look like Alex Jones is kind of done. InfoWars is still on the air, unfortunately, but it seems like he's on a downward spiral. Like he's not getting out of this money. So what happens in the next few years? I don't know. Hopefully we can update as time goes on in our upcoming shows. I hope the man never gets another platform ever again because he doesn't deserve it. But unfortunately, our world ceases to amaze me. So we'll see. But yeah, that is the
more you know,
Sandy Hook mass shooting in the case of Alex Jones, the twat waffle with 17 nipples that are leaking battery acid. I don't know where that came from.
Lovely. Palate cleansers?
Palate cleansers! Let's take a hard right turn into palate cleansers. Do you want to go first?
Yes. Bob's Burgers is always coming out with new episodes. And
I haven't caught up to the new ones.
One of the newer ones is about Rudy. And it's just really heartfelt. And it's about a really difficult situation that like a lot of kids deal with.
Yeah.
And it was just very good. I won't give any spoilers, okay, but go watch Bob's Burgers.
I just fucking love Bob's Burgers. And Tyler, it's like Hulu knows. We watch a Bones and then, or we watch a Bones review at night. And then right as we turn Bones off, it automatically pushes Bob's Burgers to the front of our like continue watching, and it just knows, like Tyler's like, it's learned us that like you all we always in the night with the Bob's Burgers, and he's over there cracking up, like he likes it just as much as I do.
Perfect.
We can thank Lola for that beauty of introducing. Have you watched the Bob's Burgers movie?
Oh yes.
See, I have not.
I went in theaters and saw it.
Shut up! It came out in theaters.
It was so good.
Oh, I waited.
I waited a long time for it. It got pushed off because of the pandemic, and I had my countdown on for it. So yeah, I saw it in theaters with Andrew.
I can see that. I can definitely.
It was great.
See that? We are in. I know this is like being recorded way in advance, but we're on like a break from school right now, and I've just had a shitty day. But I guess my palate cleanser is like I don't have strep throat. My kid does. But I got tested and I don't have it. So my palate cleanser is I didn't catch it.
Perfect. But that's a good one.
Fucking dying over here, guys. Also, chicken update. Our three little baby chickens. I don't think I've shared this on the show. We're giving them to our beautiful neighbor because one of our neighbor's dogs got out and she was giving her chickens a field trip and she killed six of them. It was really bad. So we are the
but now three, good news. You're giving them.
We're giving them the to chickies. Them. We still have them for a while till they get bigger and like can adapt and everything. But we're gonna give them to them. Sorry, my dogs are fighting and wrestling in the background.
It's fine.
Anyways, I know that was a heavy show. Go hug your cat. Go hug your dog. Go pet your chicken. So,
brush your hair, brush your teeth.
I know we're trying to get off, but I have to tell you guys about my favorite Christmas gift that I got this year. It's pretty fucking awesome. A shout out to my mother-in-law who got me a chicken carrier. It is a legit bag, like a over-the-shoulder bag with holes that you can put your chicken in and their little feet dangle out. It's the coolest thing ever.
It's so cute.
And I did use it on Christmas Day, and I put one of my little buffs in there. Her name's Dora, and she likes to explore. It was pretty fucking awesome.
Pretty,
this is
pretty.
The best gift ever.
So good. All right, guys. With that, please stay safe, stay skeptical,
and steer clear of the cultish carousel. Bye.
Bye. Also, heathens, if you're enjoying the show so far, remember to please follow us, subscribe, like, comment, and you can join our Patreon page where we have the Potty Podcast, our exclusive podcast where we shoot the shit and connect with you on a more personal level. Also, our merch store is linked in the show notes.
As always, in the show notes.
And it's available on our Instagram as well. So grab some merch there and support your girls. Deadly Faith is brought to you by Choircast Network. It's produced by Lacey Bean and Lola Robbins and audio engineered by Eric Howell. Thanks for listening.